Just a heads up, this is episode number 329, not 328, like I'm about to say in a second. We did that episode with Jen Sinkler, and then I had to shuffle things around. But don't worry, we got one more episode with Brendan Rerick coming up right now. Hello, welcome back to the FICcast. This is episode number 328. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and for the last couple weeks, you've been hearing from Brendan Rerick, and I was able to get him back one more time to finish the discussion. Like, we had this really great setup outline, but it ended up leading into a lot of discussion. So first off, Brendan, thank you for taking the time to do one more of these.
Hey, no, thank you for having me on. Hopefully this will be third and final, and maybe you can have me on again next year.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. I mean, you're just sitting back in San Francisco, and
yeah, I got my 10 hours something. Of sleep.
You got your coconut water and your all Whole Foods. God, like what is it over there?
Farmers markets, man. Oh, farmers markets is where it's at.
That's the number one. That's the biggest change that I've made to my purchases. That I now get not cage free eggs. I get like pasture-raised eggs.
Wow.
Yeah. Something I learned from Total Divas, the WWE reality show about their female wrestlers.
They eat pasteurized cage-free eggs?
No, they showed two of the women are very – this is actually on topic. Two of the women are very conscious about animal rights. And even cage-free – like that's a very loose definition where cage free, you know, how cage free chickens are really raised and how they're fed and what their conditions really look like. What you want is like pasture raised, which sounds like weird. Like we think about that as like grass fed beef or like free range. Well, basically you're looking for free range chickens, and it's about $2.50 more per dozen eggs. Mm-hmm. Which sounds like a lot, but if you think about like four eggs per meal, you're still getting three meals for like $2 and, you know, 50 cents or whatever, $2.25. So
yeah,
it's still
good,
a pretty good deal. Yeah. It's good to
all
know. Right. And it's good to always know where you're getting your food from. So, let's get back into it. In the last episode, we were talking a lot about, all this new stuff that you're really starting to do, whether it be like dance lessons, CrossFit, talking about yoga. And now we're going to be talking about two more things, the FRC course that you just took a couple weeks ago. And of course, like you and I have had a bunch of experience with the courses that Mike Mullen, or not really courses, but the in-services that Mike Mullen had with us at MBSC, but I know you've even gone above and beyond that for the PRI stuff. So we'll talk about all that, and let's try to wrap it all back around and just like, how do you take all this stuff and figure out what you're going to use without just like, it's funny, we're using like this stuff Mike Boyle says, but we, you know, work for Mike. So we end up hearing a lot of these great lessons that he's like learned, or these sayings that he's learned. But how do you make sure you're not just making shit soup by just taking a little bit of everything without having like a core system or like a core set of beliefs to ground all that stuff? So, let's first, I mean, since it was most recent, you went to one of the FRC courses a couple of weeks back at Move SF. So what was that like? What did it consist of? And I guess, what did you take away from it, and what's it all about?
Well, going back to what you said with Mike and making shit soup, you have your, like you said, your base systems or your base principles, and the base system I use is the Boyle system. So yeah, cool, I'm a Boyle's guy, whatever. And then yeah, I go to these things and I pick and choose the things that I think are applicable to what I do, and then I try them out and I see how they work. And I usually try them on myself first, and then on my, you know, my best or most advanced personal training clients, and then we add them into the group classes. The thing I love about the FRC, or functional range conditioning, and Dr. Spina, If anyone wants to follow him or check out his stuff, it's Dr. Andreo Spina. Just type his name in Google, and he's got all sorts of – he's got websites. He's got Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, blah, 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 blah. The thing I love about his stuff is that he gives you principles that you can almost put into your – whatever your system is or whatever you're already doing, and you can use them right away. So yeah, he gives you like cool new exercises and stuff, but the principles he gives you, you can use almost right away. PRI is, that's a really, really interesting rabbit hole that you go down once you start taking those courses. And, it's not as applicable as what, I've learned from Dr. Spina. But of course there's a lot of, you know, gold gems in there, for everyone to take out and use. It's just a little bit harder to, apply them. So the PRI stuff has taken me, you know, almost 2 years now since I took my first course to really be comfortable with it. Spina's course, actually, so the FRC that was this weekend is the second time I've taken it. So I actually took it in Connecticut at Mike Ranfone's place a year and a half ago. And Spina, Dr. Spina is a chiropractor. So he also has three manual courses. And I've taken two of the manual courses. So if you're a manual therapist or a PT or chiro or whatever, his manual courses are just as good. So this is actually the second time I've taken FRC, and you know, he's done it probably 25, 30 times since I last took it. So this one was even better than the first time I took it, and the first time was good. The biggest thing that I get out of his stuff, or the principles, kind of, are his CARs. He calls them CARs. So they're controlled articular rotations. So your joints love to be rotated. Obviously not dynamically and as fast as possible. And he calls them controlled rotations because it's almost like you're moving through mud. So if you just take your wrist and you flex your wrist to make a forearm muscle, and then you just rotate it around and you go really, really, really slow, and then you let your hand open up, and you're just trying to make the biggest circle you can, and you just go like you're moving through mud, that's a controlled articulation. And just like anything else, like that's why Kevin and I named our company Movement is Medicine, your joints love to do that. And they love to be moved. And the problem is most of us don't ever move all of our joints in their full ranges of motion every day. And, you know, if you never put your arms over your head, your body adapts to that. So the average person, I would guess, probably puts their arms over their head to do two things or three things, probably to change a light bulb, to grab a coffee cup out of the cabinet, and to put their luggage in the overhead bin. Other than that, people don't really put their arms over their head. And, you know, if you believe in evolution and, you know, we come from monkeys, your arms were meant to swing, which is why you have a brachialis muscle and a pec minor muscle is because those were made to swing from branch to branch, tree to tree. So, you know, your arms love to go over your head. So his stuff, like the controlled articular rotation, so you literally – he takes you from – your toes all the way up to your neck. And you just learn how to rotate each segment. That's something that I've actually, so now I foam roll one day and that as part of my warm up. So I foam roll and use a lacrosse ball and get every single muscle tissue from head to toe. And then the next day I'll do my controlled articular rotations instead of foam rolling. Because just like anything else, your body adapts to foam rolling. So if you foam roll every single day, your body's going to adapt to it. So I kind of alternate one day foam rolling, one day controlled articular rotations. So that's been one of my favorite things that I've taken from him. And it's also great homework exercises for people. So say someone comes in and they have no dorsiflexion. It's like, okay, well, these are the muscle tissues I'm going to work on for you in our manual treatment session today. And then when you go home, I want you to do controlled articular rotations for your ankle all day long. And you can't overdo them because all you're doing is rotating that joint through its ranges of motion. And, you know, that feedback and that motion and that movement, like your body loves that stuff. So it's like candy, you know, and you just do it all day long. So the problem with a lot of people who go to and get massages is they go and get, you know, they go and get an hour massage and then they get up and they're like, oh my God, I feel so amazing. Mm. And then, you know, 12 hours later, they feel like shit again. And it's because they didn't go home. They went home and just sat at their in their chair and watched TV and then went and laid down in bed and then got up the next day and they're stiff again. And it's like, well, you know, if you had went home, you know, every few hours, just taken all of your joints through their full ranges of motion, you probably would have felt better for like 4 or 5 days after your massage. But then again, that's, if you want to look at it, I have a very, I'm very much a realist. So the thought of people going home and doing that is probably very unlikely unless you have a type A person. But in theory, if you went home and moved all your joints and all their rotations, you'd probably feel pretty damn good. The other thing that I really took from him is his, so this is where I was talking about with yoga is the yogis have unbelievable passive ranges of motion. So they can fold themselves in half, forward and backwards and side to side, but they still get back pain. And it's like, how do you get back pain when you can move in these incredible ranges of motion? It's because you don't have control at those ranges of motion. So what Spina's actually advocating is, you get to your end range. So say, you know, I can get my hamstring almost by, or I can get my foot by my ear, right? If I have great flexibility, I can't, but some people can. You can get your foot by your ear. That's great. Now I want to get you strong with your foot by your ear. So you would have your, you know, your knee or your foot as close as you can to the side of your head, and then you would do isometric contractions. So you would be getting strong at your end range. So now the likeliness of you getting injured at that end range because you're now strong and you can control it is very much less likely than if you had just been like, you know, Gumby and you can get your foot behind your head, but you don't have any control there.
Okay. So before we go any further, let's pause and let's give me like an example of what you mean by that. Like trying to get stronger. You're talking about like doing isometrics at the end of range of motion. So, what give me like an exercise that if you kind of wanted to start, like the cool thing, like with a lot of stuff that you would learn about is that, you know, you can start messing around with it with a new client, obviously with an educated set that you're working with, but what would you do when you want to start trying this stuff out to evaluate if it's worth programming for all your clients or for athletes or whatever?
Okay, so I know this is, so I'm just gonna say right now, this this is my interpretation of functional range conditioning and of PRI. What I say is kind of like how I've implemented it, how I think about it. Please go and take the course and learn it from the actual inventor of said course, not from me. Don't take my word for it. This is, and it's kind of, it's not very easy to explain, especially without having visuals. But I think the best exercise I can probably explain this with is pigeon pose. Okay, so everyone knows what a pigeon pose is when you have your foot up and you're stretching your external rotators, the outside of your hip. So basically, everyone has different ranges of motion. So my pigeon pose looks a lot different than yours, than somebody who's been doing yoga for 10 years, than somebody who has a hip replacement, right? So we all have our different ranges, but for me to get more range of motion, the idea is to use isometrics. It's almost like it's a PNF, so proprio neuromuscular facilitation. So you're PNFing your own muscles or joints to get into a better stretch. Now, if you already have those ranges of motion, so think yoga, then now you're going to get strong. So whether you need more range of motion or whether you need control and strength, it's the same thing. You're going to do isometrics. So you get in your pigeon pose, and instead of just like hanging out in pigeon pose and like relaxing into it, what you're going to do is you're going to activate by pushing your knee into the ground, you're going to activate one side of the joint for 30 seconds to a minute. And then you're going to activate the other side of the joint by pulling your stomach to your knee and almost get your adductors to turn on. And you're going to get both sides. So your PNF, it's not PNF, but a lot of people understand PNF. So you're going to PNF both sides of the joint. And then those people who need more flexibility, the brain's going to say, okay, I'm going to give you new ranges of motion because we're using it now. And people who need strength, they're going to build muscle tissue now, or not muscle tissue, but new strength and tissue and control around that joint because they already have the flexibility. So Spina's whole thing is mobility equals flexibility plus strength.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not enough to just be flexible, and it's not enough just to be strong if you want to be mobile.
It's about being like strong through that range of motion that you're trying to acquire?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And you need to be strong at all ranges. So if somebody flexes their bicep,
mm-hmm.
you make the biggest bicep right in the middle of the range because that's where you're strongest. Now, if somebody's going to tear their bicep, where do they tear it? They tear it either with their arm at end range where it's completely lengthened, or they tear it where it's at its shortest range where your fist is almost by your shoulder. So you're strongest in the middle and you're weakest at end ranges, like as you're stretching it as far as you can, and then you're making it as short as possible.
Gotcha.
So he wants to train. He's advocating that we train the shortest ranges and the longest ranges because we already do tons of bicep curls where we get the middle range.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to injury proof your bicep, for example. That's not a great example, but we'll use it for this podcast.
Yeah. So are we not, I mean, obviously I've not taken the course, so I'm kind of just right. like shooting in the dark, but you know, if I'm doing something like whether it be like, say like just a walking lunge where I'm working through what I believe to be full range of motion, like I'm getting hip flexion, I'm getting extension, I'm getting knee flexion, knee extension, and I feel like I'm going through at least like 90 degrees of each as I go through that movement. Am I not like I'm under load the whole time. So am I not, right. you know, strengthening at those end ranges while I'm doing something that's dynamic?
So what we would say is that if you have, this is where we're talking about like movement is medicine. Mm-hmm. And if you have those ranges of motion, so like if you have hip flexion, you have hip extension, you have ankle dorsiflexion, you have all those ranges and you can control them all, then yes, you are training everything you need to train. You might be training. So no, you're not training your end ranges of motion because you have to train those end ranges segmentally.
Gotcha.
So okay. If I want to train my end ranges of dorsiflexion, I need to get down on the ground and either have somebody put my ankle at end range and then do the isometrics
mm-hmm.
or eccentrics. So think box hip flexor stretch.
Yep.
So you're getting to your end range of your hip extension, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he would tell you what you want to do is you want to activate both sides of your hip extensors. So you want to activate the front side and the back side.
Mm-hmm.
And by activating those, activation isn't a great word, but by getting those two sides of the joint, your brain's going to say, okay, you want more range of motion, I'll give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
So then it kind of gives you an extra 10 degrees, which is kind of like it's kind of the PNF principles.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes sense. All right. So, I guess this is more of a shot in the dark, but this is the question that maybe some other listeners are going to have is like, all right, are we getting to the point where we're focusing more on the smaller rocks and getting away from the bigger rocks, or how would you take what you learned from this and would it affect, or how would you like adjust how you would program from what you learned?
Right, exactly. So like I said, I like his stuff because I just took these principles and so I already passively stretch with people. And you know, in our group stuff at MBSC, we were already stretching. You know, we have that 10-minute stretch circuit. We do our dynamic stretching in the warm up. We do our, you know, like lunge mobility work or the lunge matrix. And all I've done is taken these principles, these isometrics and eccentrics, and added them into stretches we already do. So we do it with pigeon. I do it with pigeon. I do it with a Spider-Man stretch. I do it with a box hip flexor stretch. I do it with our T-spine rotations. So I took some of his things, but really I've just taken the principles and the ideas of isometrics and eccentrics and put them into what I already do. So I actually didn't have to change anything. I've just added to the stretch circuits and the mobility work that I already have been doing. So,
okay. I gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Totally. Okay. Yeah, no, it's something that, like I was saying before, Connor and I talked a little bit about, when he was on the show, and it's something that is, it's fascinating. Like, it's definitely one of those things where it might be like a really good, like, next step in terms of education for me to kind of see what they're doing, because, I mentioned a couple times on the show, but for terms of like straight up like programming, not super interesting. Like, I feel like we already have a really good grasp of like what we should be doing for sets and reps and total volume for people to get them stronger, to get them more athletic, to get them, you know, towards their fat loss goals or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this kind of, I wouldn't necessarily call it fringe, but this like additional stuff that we probably need to start understanding is really fascinating. It's like when we have the guys from Original Strength come in and talk about crawling, and then we see such a, like, something as simple as that have a huge effect on the results that we're getting with, you know, ourselves, our athletes, our personal training clients. Mm-hmm. And same thing like with Michael Mullen and the PRI stuff. So, yeah, I don't, is there anything else from the course that you kind of found to be like really fascinating? I mean, is it a 1 day or 2 day course?
It's a 2 day course. I think the biggest thing is that one, like, isometrics and eccentrics are a very, very important thing, and they're a great way to teach people how to use certain joints and muscles again. I think so. And also, I've gotten into triphasic training, so Caldeetz's stuff. And Caldeetz is more on the performance end of things. So Spina is more on the rehab, like flexibility, mobility stuff. And then Caldeetz is in like the training, so like lifting heavy ass weights with isometrics and eccentrics and concentrics. So it's like I've been trying to kind of mix the two together, and I still haven't figured out how I'm going to do that yet. And it's also, I also started reading Pavel's Super Joints. So Pavel Super Joints is like, he's got a lot of the same principles that Spina does, and like Spina does a lot of his eventually once you progress. So I like Spina stuff because he also has tons of progressions. So like, you don't just start out by like doing weighted stretching. You have to work your way up to it, just like anything else. So your body adapts to stretching. And then, you know, Pavel's Super Joints, he's using weights and to get into deeper end ranges. And so I think the biggest thing is I've added isometrics, and it's way more isometrics and eccentrics, and the controlled articular rotations I've added 1 day instead of foam rolling. And then I'm trying to figure out how to add it into strength training, because I don't want people to think that I don't have my clients lift, or I don't think lifting heavy weights is a good idea. I still think lifting's a great idea, and I still lift as heavy as I can for myself. So yeah, I mean, like we talked about, you just got to find a way to integrate this stuff in your own system, and I'm still working on that.
Cool. All right, well, let's move on to talk a little bit about our PRI, because like I said, that is something that we've gotten a bunch of education on inside of MBSC, and you've gone outside and gone to some of the courses. But really, for us, I think like we'll talk in the context of MBSC, it's always kind of like figuring out, we have this hour and a half for our athletes and we have this program that's already set up. So if we want to ever add anything, or even for our adult groups, like, as you know, like we have an hour. So if we have this set hour and we're going to find something that we think is good, it has to be good enough to say, all right, well, we're going to take 5 minutes of this away to add 5 minutes of this and put it into the program. So, yeah, I mean, let's just talk a little bit about, you know, PRI, how it's kind of changed your mindset on how you programmed at MBSC and just how you've used it in terms of movement as medicine and your programming today.
All right. Yeah. So I've taken, we had Michael Mullen come in 3 or 4 times for an hour each. And he was trying to show us how it kind of integrates more into strength conditioning, which was amazing. And that's kind of how my first exposure to it. And then I went and took myokinematics. And then I went and took the TMCC course, which I think they now call Cervical Revolution, which was actually with Ron Haruska, which was one of the best weekends of learning ever in my life, because that dude is incredibly smart. For training, I think the big thing is that I don't spend more than 3 minutes of teaching breathing or a PRI exercise to somebody. So this is kind of like you want an accumulation effect and you want a carryover. So I think like I said, I don't get away from lifting heavy weights and moving and jumping and all that stuff. And we want to implement this in a way that it's going to help those things. So I only use 4 exercises. That's the 90-90 position with your feet up on a box, and all the variations after that. The one where you're laying on your right side and you use your adductor, it's an adductor pullback, quadruped breathing where you're pushing your hands into the ground, and knees to chest or squat breathing exercise. And I think there's actually a Cressy video. So no more than 3 minutes. I use one of those 4 exercises. And the thing I try to get instilled in people is that this is going to carry over into everything that we do. So we just did 3 minutes of 90-90 breathing on the ground. Now we're going to move on to our stretching stuff, where I'm going to use isometrics and eccentrics with my stretching. But I'm also going to incorporate and encourage you to keep breathing in your nose for 4 seconds, out your mouth for 8 seconds. So then we move on to our mobility stuff, and I'm going to encourage you to breathe correctly, how we just learned doing our 90-90 stretch. So it should all carry over. With the dynamic stuff and the lifting, I still haven't figured out how I want to incorporate breathing into that, other than breathing in between exercises and conditioning. So if people really think about it, I think we talked about this at one of our staff meetings, actually. After you do like a tempo run and you're breathing really heavy, don't put your arms over your head. That is the worst thing you can do, because you're just going to take in all of your air into your chest and throat. What you want to do is put your hands on your knees, round your back to create like a vacuum, and then inhale for 4 seconds and exhale for 8. So,
like the complete opposite
of what we've
always been told from our basketball coach or our football coach, right, or whatever.
So it's funny though, like everyone, what is the first thing somebody does after they run a really hard sprint?
They hands on their over. Head or
no, no, over. No. Well, so if you didn't tell them what to do, what would somebody do? They would immediately put their hands on their knees and start taking in air.
Naturally. Yeah.
Naturally, because our bodies inherently know that's correct. But because you don't want to look weak, you know, your coach yells at you and says, put your hands over your head, mm-hmm. and then you can't take in any air at all. So our bodies already naturally know that the best way to take in air when you need it is to put your hands on your knees, put your head down, round your back, and take in really deep breaths, because you're creating that vacuum for your diaphragm. So it's just like, oh my God, this makes, you know, it's one of those aha moments.
Yeah. And it's even in terms of like the PRI breathing practices that you'll, one of the things that you can do is go on all fours and get in like a quadruped position. And then right. You would think you wanted to get into like an arched position, like you, if you're going to keep your back flat. But one of the things that they'll have you do is actually go, if you want to think like a cat camel thing, you actually go into that cat position with your back fully rounded and like your chin tucked under to do your breathing, like your breathing stuff. And that's one of those things that has helped alleviate the subscap and lat issues that I've had from doing too many damn chin-ups. But it totally works. And it's a reason why I need to get to one of those PRI courses, because I don't know why. I just know it does, which is almost good enough for me. But I'm getting to the point where I kind of like want to know, why is this actually helping me? When I'm in a position where we're always coaching people out of that position. And then like, it makes you think like, all right, well, maybe are we doing something wrong coaching people out of these positions and trying to get their back flat, get their back arched. But obviously we need to do that if we're going to be under heavy loads with like a trap bar deadlift or a dumbbell row or something like that. So it's not necessarily one of those things that it is, you know, one practice for every movement. It is just for that specific, you know, exercise or drill.
Right. Well, and for people, it might be also, I call it rainbow breathing. So you're trying to make a rainbow with your back, and you're trying, like I said, you're trying to create that vacuum for your diaphragm to work. Mm-hmm. And actually, maybe I can answer your question. It's kind of like my 3-minute PRI spiel that I give people. And remember, this is not a replacement of the course. So what you're actually doing there is PRI to me is training the off. So when you work out, that's training the on. So there's on and off, and there's sympathetic, which is on, and parasympathetic, which is off. Now, 90% of us live a life of being in a sympathetic state. So all day long, there's lights around us, there's shit to do, we have anxiety, we're rushing from one thing to the next, there's music playing, like we're always in a sympathetic state, at least in the way we live in society. And that's how we equate success, which is why, like I said, my definition of success has changed, that if you're not working 15 hours a day and up at 5 a.m. and sleeping 4 hours a night, and making a shit ton of money, then you're not successful. So that's where we're always in the sympathetic state. And by putting yourself in these PRI positions, what you're doing is you're taking somebody so far the opposite way. And let me kind of backtrack a little bit. Robert Sapolsky, the guy who wrote Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers, put up a quote the other day that if someone is in perfect homeostasis, every time you inhale, you go into a sympathetic state, and every time you exhale, you go into a parasympathetic state. So if you think about that, if all day long I'm just inhaling, and I am always stressed out, I never ever get that exhale that puts me into a parasympathetic state. So what PRI is trying to do is take you so far the opposite way. So if you actually, you just sit here and you take a deep breath in, what do? You go into extension, right? So inhale, you go into extension, you arch your back. What happens when you exhale? You go into flexion. So PRI puts a ton of emphasis on the exhale, which puts you into flexion. And then by putting you in like these quadruped rainbow breathing positions, which is so far the opposite way of extension, that when you stand up, you'll be somewhere in the middle, if that makes sense. So you're in extension all day long. I put you into flexion, and then I make you exhale as hard as you can possibly exhale and get out all of your air, and then I have you stand up. After 10 minutes of doing that, you should be somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. So think of a pendulum. That's kind of like the PRI is training the off. So it's putting you into a parasympathetic state before you go and train something really, really hard, where you're putting yourself into a sympathetic state again. And if you think about the best athletes in the world, McGill always talks about like this ability to pulse. I think of it as the same way. So like the best soccer and the player in the world, I believe Lionel Messi, if you put a GPS on that guy, he is the best in the world because he can go from being really, really relaxed and just kind of like jogging around efficiently and saving all of his energy. And then he can go balls to the wall and beat any guy to the ball and do these incredible tricks. And he can play an entire game without getting gassed because he can, his on and off is so much better than everyone else's. And like McGill calls this the pulsing theory. So the best athletes are in the world are the ones who can go from a relaxed state to like a dynamic movement back to a relaxed state as better than anybody else. So I think of parasympathetic and sympathetic as the same way. So I don't know if that helps you at all. That's kind of like my 3-minute spiel on PRI and what it's actually doing for you.
No, totally. And that's like I mentioned multiple times, and it's going to sound like a broken record now when Michael Mullen was on and when Connor was on, but like even with the PRI stuff, like we saw, I don't know, maybe 5 or even 6 hours of that stuff at MBSC, from lectures to hands-on practical stuff. I've seen Michael Mullen speak at Perform Better. And even like after that, like I start grasping the concepts because it's pretty heady to start understanding it. But once it starts clicking, it makes a lot of sense. And it is well worth checking it out. If you ever go to the Perform Better summits, make sure you sit in for Michael Mullen's talk, or go back and listen to the 2 episodes or 3 episodes that he was on to start getting an idea of how he implements that stuff into his practice, so you can start getting some of these benefits. Because like I've said multiple times, like that has allowed me to actually dumbbell bench again, where I always was afraid of tearing my pecs again just because I tore them, didn't ever get any kind of like rehab, or it just let the scar tissue build up, and then try to get some range of motion back and then start doing dumbbell bench again. So really, really fascinating stuff. But yeah, I mean, I guess in terms of like the PRI stuff, like, is there anything else that you've like taken from that and made you change the way that you program? I know we've talked about on the show, at least I did with Michael Mullen, about how we've made some small changes to the MBSC program, like trying to do some breathing with the adult groups, trying to do some stuff with our athlete groups. But I think it is all just a case of like finding that balance and finding where we put it to make sure that we're not going too far in one direction.
Yeah. So I mostly use it in the beginning, right before we do anything. Cause I'm assuming, you know, if you're coming from work, you're probably in a sympathetic state. So I just have you get on your back. We'll do the one or two of the PRI exercises, no more than 3 minutes of breathing. So that means I have 57 more minutes with you to do all the other strength training stuff. And then the only other time I kind of use PRI is if I'm doing bilateral stuff. So for example, if I'm going to go do a heavy, heavy deadlift or a front squat or a goblet squat or whatever, I'll have somebody lay down and kind of, I almost use it as like also a visualization technique. So I'm like, okay, we're going to do some breathing. We'll put you in a parasympathetic state. I want you to do some visualization of, you know, you're about to deadlift 500 pounds. And also the idea is that we'll put you into neutral. So like I said, like we'll take you so far back the other way and put you into neutral when you stand up, that when you go in deadlift, hopefully it feels a lot better, or you can get into a more neutral state. And now your diaphragm, your core, and everything is integrated and working together. So that's the only other time I'll use it in my training. With movement as medicine, actually how we use it is we do an SFMA. So we find out what patterns are dysfunctional or what joints are not working correctly. Then what I'll do is I'll do a PRI technique, we'll do the test first and then do a PRI technique, and then go back and see how your joints or the pattern is working. So my thought process there is that if I get you into neutrality, so your rib cage and pelvis over each other and your diaphragm working correctly, and now you have those ranges of motion, why would I perform manual work on you if I can fix it with a breathing exercise? Now, if we go and do that and it didn't get any better, then I know I need to do some manual work. So Sometimes what happens is, you know, usually when people come in, they have multiple dysfunctions, and breathing will help, you know, say breathing helps their toe touch, but it doesn't help them get all of their hip internal rotation back. So, okay, the toe touch we know gets fixed with the breathing exercise. So I don't need to do a ton of manual work to try to get his toe touch back. But I do know that breathing only gives him back a slight little tiny bit of hip internal rotation. So that's actually where manual work comes into play along with the breathing. And then, you know, you just keep going from there and keep giving them exercises and keep doing manual work and keep working on their breathing. And then, like I said, all my breathing work also carries over into all of my stretching and mobility and manual work. So it's all integrated together. You just need to find out where it works in your system. And like I said, my two little talks here on the functional range conditioning course and PRI don't do either course justice. And also it's my interpretation. So some of the things I might've said might not have been exactly to the book, or maybe they wouldn't agree with me, but that's how I see it. So
yeah, it's like, it's not something that we're ever going to be able to cover in an episode of a podcast or whatever. It's pretty in-depth stuff. I do want to definitely take this time to, again, as always, thank our Patreon supporters and people that are supporting the show through PayPal. You can go to Patreon. It's really easy to do, just starting at $1 per episode. You can even cap it on a per month basis. You can go to patreon.com/thefitcast, and it's really easy to set up. You can just use a credit card or a PayPal account to get it going. And every time I post a new episode, not only will you get it at least 1 week early for being a Patreon supporter, but then you'll also be supporting that with that dollar. So it will be at the end of every month, it gets tallied up. And if we do 4 episodes in a month, they'll basically have you or charge you for $4, which is a really great service. And it has allowed me to continue to do these shows and make sure that a new one is coming out every single week for you guys to get this stuff delivered right to your favorite podcast application. So like I said, you get that stuff a week early. There's even a dedicated RSS feed. So if you still want it to go to your favorite podcasting app or iTunes or whatever, I put instructions on how to do that for every single episode. So again, it is patreon.com/thefitcast. And I can never thank our Patreon supporters enough, but people like Brett Medling. I'm always going to destroy some of these names. Gabrielle Chamberlain, Brian Anglum, Gillette Bork. You guys are all doing $2 per episode, which means so much. And that is super awesome that you guys are doing it. Basically, like $4 a month if you do $1 per episode. It is. It sounds like a little, but it really does add up. And it is what allows me to set aside this time. Instead of watching Fast and Furious movies, I'm recording these podcasts because it is financially beneficial for me to do that instead of the other. So,
hey, and people get to pay a whole month for me.
Yeah, well, they get almost a month. They get almost, I mean, you can spend $3. You got 3 episodes with Brendan, so it's not a bad deal.
Yeah, I hope they like what I have to say and that I'm worth $3.
$3 for 3 hours of content. It's not a bad deal.
No.
So let's kind of wrap up. I know we've really gone all over the place. We started talking about in that first episode about just like the I guess the behavior changes or the lifestyle changes that you've made since going to San Francisco, trying to get in more sleep and trying to just live a much healthier and happier life by not going crazy when it comes to work and stuff like that. But I don't know, any final thoughts on kind of where you're at? And if you, I know we definitely have some people that are in the industry, some people that are up and comers, any advice that you would give them? If they want to, you know, reach a high spot in this industry?
Well, I mean, I can tell you right now that I do not regret all the hard work that I put in, all the hours that I worked. I think when you initially get into the industry, like that's what you have to do. Take all the clients that you can take, learn as much as you can, spend your money on educational courses. With that being said, you don't need to spend thousands of dollars. There's things like the Fitcast, where you can donate $1 a month and you own, you know, you get all the educational content you need. You have what, 350 episodes now. There's strengthcoach.com, there's Sports Rehab Expert. There's so much information out there that if you can't afford to take a course, cool. But I definitely recommend it. And, you know, I'll never forget when Mike actually at one of our meetings had a Darren Hardy quote where your best return on investment is yourself. And there's a 30-to-1 ratio. So for every dollar I spend on myself over my lifetime, it's going to give me $30 back. Which is like, holy crap, that's a lot. So I'm like Connor Ryan. I probably took 15, 20 courses last year and probably spent $15,000-$20,000 in courses and missed time at work and travel. And, you know, it's completely worth it, which is why I get to do cool podcasts like this. Yeah. And then you're going to reach a point where it's like, okay, am I going to make this a career for myself? And then that's where you kind of, I mean, I had to hit rock bottom, to be honest, like mentally, physically, before I made the change. And I pray that you don't do the same if you're a young strength coach and that you're listening to this, that you get to a point where you're like, okay, I'm going to make this a career. And now I have so many clients that enjoy working with me that I can tell them, these are the hours I now work. And you know, if people like you and they want to work with you, they'll make their schedule around you. And so, yeah, really take care of yourself. And like I said, in the beginning, you might not be able to do that, but you want to get to a point where you can, if you're going to make it your life's work. And then to never stop training. I think that's where one of the places where I went wrong is I kind of stopped practicing what I preach. And yeah, it's just a hard lesson that I had to learn. And I would say, don't do that. So keep training, learn as much as you can from books, websites, find a mentor that you really, really enjoy and learn their system and, you know, find a system that works and then go around and take these extra courses and incorporate them into said system. Yeah. And enjoy it. If you're going to make a career out of it, try to find a balance. And it only took me 6 years to find a balance and a move to San Francisco.
Yeah. That's all. I mean, that's all.
So that's all. That's it. That's all it took.
Yeah. Let's
3,000 miles.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you got to do that. Like I tried going to Japan, didn't really work out. So right. With all that being said, I mean, you talked about like finding a system and, you know, it would be bad if we did not talk about the certified functional strength coach system, something that both you and I, along with Mike Boyle and Kevin Carr, have been working on for the last couple of years. And we're getting close to the first year. It hasn't even been. We launched in September, so it's like 8 months into it or something like that. But anyways, if you haven't checked it out, you can go to certifiedfsc.com. And really, when we like sat down and like started thinking about this, it was the case of, all right, we kind of all like, none of us in the room like really like certifications. Like we kind of make fun of some certifications out there because you feel like you're just going to a weekend seminar. What are you really learning? What are you taking home from it? And then we thought, all right, well, instead of just, you know, bitching about that, why don't we just like look at these certifications, figure out what we think they're doing wrong and how we can do it better or how we can put something together that we can be proud of. So, that's kind of like what we did. So there's a really big practical component to it that is required. We'll never have an online only certification. And if we did, it would have to be some kind of like live video where you'd have to carry around like an iPad or something like that. So we would actually still have some sort of live event if you're up in Alaska or something or Antarctica and we can't actually get there. Maybe
Antarctica.
Someday. I don't know. They have gyms up there. So, you know,
I'm not flying for that one.
Yeah. I mean, that's Kevin multiple flights. That. That's multiple. That's not, if you can't get a direct flight, we're not doing a certification there. I'm just kidding. But
a certification in an igloo.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're going all over the place, including, right. I mean, well, we don't have a lot of the dates announced. We're trying to work on dates, but I guess what we would say is, like, at least check it out. I will be 100% honest. We have gotten nothing but incredibly positive feedback from not just the people that have attended, but also the owners of facilities that have sent their staffs to us, which is weirdly one of the bigger things that we're getting are new hires from gyms. So if you're listening to this and you're getting a new hire, if you want them to understand the MBSC system, and really what it comes down to is learn how to coach really quickly. And what I mean is, like, learn the proper coaching cues that we use, what we do when we get into situations where people are not performing a movement pattern correctly, how do we regress them or progress them, or how do we give them better coaching cues to get them into the position that we need them to get in. And at the end of the day, it's just really great. There's some online education, but really, like I said, it's that one day where you get there and you're with a group and you go through the whole program. And we spend one day dissecting like an hour and a half program, which is really where it gets to be great. And I know, Brandon, you've done a bunch of these now, and you were just at Results Fitness a couple weeks ago doing one there, but you've been having a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely love it. I love teaching. And I just, the way I think about what we're doing is right now in the personal training industry, the barriers for entry are so low. The same thing with CrossFit. The barriers for entry are so easy. You just pay 10 grand and you can own a CrossFit. Anyone can do it. And it's the same thing with personal training. You pay your $250 to whatever certification you want to take. And then you go to an H&R Block and you sit down in a room and you take a 150 question test. And if you pass, you're now a certified personal trainer. And then, you know, people who have spent their life's work doing this stuff end up getting lumped in with those people who just went down and sat and just took a test and now they're certified. So the way that what we're providing people with is, well, number one is the content is all up to date and it's all done online right now. So you can access it at any time. You get, I believe, five or maybe four or five presentations mm-hmm. on programming, the art of coaching, how to regress or progress somebody based off of where they're at when they come and see you, assessments, the flow of a session, conditioning. So you get everything. You get like 15, 20 hours worth of material before you even get to the course. And it's all up to date, which I don't want to make this sound like I'm bashing on all these certifications, but
we're like in a better situation where, like, I run the online stuff. So if right. we ever change something, all we do is we go into our staff meeting room. I throw on the camera for 90 minutes. We film it. And right now our whole program's up to date. We might make some modifications to our written exam, but
exactly.
We can always make modifications to our practical stuff on the fly because we live this stuff every day. Like, we're implementing this stuff every single day. We're getting to see what goes wrong in the summer. Like, we have 300 plus athletes walking through that door every single day, plus all of our adult groups, plus all of our PT clients. And then for you, it's all your massage therapy clients too.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, cause if you put out a book and if you read out of a book, that book is, once you get it in your hand, it's already 2 years out of date. Because to go from publishing to drafting to all mm-hmm. that, it takes 2 years. So, yeah, like we update our stuff almost weekly.
Yeah, and I think
it's like, always changing.
I'll be real. The number one, the thing in terms of like feedback that people are saying, like, yeah, we're not too sure about is we give you Mike's Advances in Functional Training ebook, which is like 3 years old now. So he's doing an updated version of that. And as soon as that's done, it's going to be up there.
Oh, awesome. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So behind the scenes, top secret stuff, but we can share it here. But like with all that, it's ever evolving. And if you know anything about MBSC, it's like Mike has his ears open for everything. Like, he's open to change, and, you know, he's willing to say, you know, I was wrong, and throw something out and put something else in. Like, he did it with the yoga and the breathing and the PRI stuff. All that, you know, being considered, we, at the end of the day, like, we're trying to put together the best program possible. But on top of that, at our gym, like, I think our programming is good, but I think if anyone comes in and they hang out for a day, the number one thing they'll say is your coaches.
Right.
Your coaches are what makes that gym so good. I mean, Mike is not coaching all day. He's not there 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. He's there coaching his athletes and his clients, but, you know, the other hours of the day, and obviously can't take every group because we have groups going every 15 minutes. That's our coaches. And, that's like what we've built up in terms of a reputation. So, yeah, absolutely. Definitely make sure you check out certifiedfsc.com and give it a look. Like, hopefully we'll be coming to your area. But worst case, subscribe to that mailing list. We're going to try to get to the biggest cities we can, but, this is run by us. So we have day jobs. We have, you know, we're doing stuff. We're not just dedicating a staff just for certifications. It's actually run by our coaches, Brendan, myself, Kevin Carr, Marco Sanchez, and Christina has also been helping us at MBSC to do the certifications. And, we want to keep that high quality bar where it is. We don't want to just water it down. And the last thing I'll say is, like, our practicals are set up in groups of like 12 to 16 people. You're not going to be in a room with 100 people and one coach, because you'll never get that feedback. You'll never learn anything because you'll never get actual feedback to what you were doing wrong. You're just going to continue to do what you're doing when you got there in the first place. Might learn a new exercise or two. But yeah, that's a spiel, and I know we're running long on time, but, yeah, I mean, like I said before, you can check out Brendan's stuff at Rearick Strength on Twitter, movement-as-medicine.com for their website. And you can also get them on Instagram and all that stuff, but probably the Twitter is the best place to start. And then you can go from there. And I don't know, Brendan, did I miss anything else?
No, the only thing I want to say about a certified functional strength coach is that for me, I feel comfortable recommending any trainer who's gone through certified functional strength coach, and I would let that person probably train my own clients, and I know that they would be progressed correctly and that they would be prepared to do that. And I think that's really huge for me to say after doing all of these certified functional strength coaches, is that everyone that's done it is ready to coach.
Well, everyone that passes, we have passes, failed people.
Yeah, we have so, failed people. So
you got to be able to do the stuff.
Everyone who passes, I am completely comfortable. I think it's probably one of the best certifications you can take. Like you said, especially for a new trainer or for a new hire. And our goal really is to become the gold standard. So you see somebody with a resume that says CFSC, you know that person has done their homework. Mm-hmm. And that's all I got to say about certified functional strength coach. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I hope I've encouraged some people to maybe try some things, change some things. And I hope that I was interesting for almost 3 hours now.
Yeah, no, I think we're definitely good, and you can always contact Brendan through all those means if you want to get a hold of him. That's it from us. As always, don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can submit reviews on there if you enjoy it. You can check out the Fitcast on Twitter at Fitcast. I am at Kevin Larrabee, and thank you again, as always, to our Patreon supporters for allowing me to do another episode. Thank you, and have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, Kev. I'm in the fast lane, racing through the bed space. I don't want to slow down. I do what I want now. Getting down to the old school, just to kill with the new cool. Once the working day is done, it's our time for having fun. I'm gonna be